Support for Newsworthy comes from Inlivion, providing affordable housing and supportive services to help build strong foundations for a better future for hardworking families, seniors, and the disabled in Charlotte. More information available at Inlivion.com.
From 90.7 WFAE, this is Newsworthy for Tuesday, April 15th, 2025. I'm Eric Thiel. The city of Charlotte on Monday night discussed how it wants to spend $100 million from a recent housing bond. One project that wasn't recommended for funding is affordable housing at Brooklyn Village, a long-delayed redevelopment in Uptown's 2nd Ward. Steve Harrison has this report.
Last decade, Mecklenburg County partnered with the Peebles Corporation to develop Brooklyn Village with apartments, office space, and a hotel. But Peebles hasn't built anything yet. Earlier this year, Peebles announced a new plan for the first phase, a 250-unit complex with all apartment units being affordable. To get the project started, Peebles asked the city for $13.5 million from its housing trust fund. But the city's Housing and Neighborhood Services said, as of now, that's too much money. It said that's the largest request it's ever received from an affordable housing developer. It also said there are, quote, challenges with people's financials. The city recommended to City Council funding 6 other apartment complexes, as well as money to buy and preserve existing affordable housing. Steve Harrison, WFAE News.
A group of Cabarrus residents have filed a lawsuit against the county and Cabarrus County commissioners to prevent Lamari Austin Stripling from replacing Commissioner Chris Meesmer, who's been appointed to the North Carolina Senate. The Independent Tribune reports Cabarrus Citizens for Government Integrity seeks to have last week's appointment vote declared unlawful, invalid, and void. Attorney John Scarborough filed the suit in Cabarrus County Superior Court Monday. The suit claims commissioners blatantly and knowingly violated state law and the Board of Commissioners' own rules of procedure to ensure that a predicted vacancy on the Board of Commissioners would not be filled by a political opponent. In a meeting called April 10th, Vice Chair Laura Blackwell Lindsay nominated Austin Stripling, and Commissioner Larry Pittman seconded the nomination. Only 3 commissioners were present. That move came after County Attorney Daniel Peterson reviewed legal issues and gave his opinion that Meesmer, who would be stepping down, could participate. No one else was nominated. Meesmer was appointed to the Senate, but had not officially been sworn in. The North Carolina Department of Transportation will temporarily close the Cabarrus Avenue Bridge over Irish Buffalo Creek on April 21st. State bridge maintenance teams will repair the bridge deck. Drivers will be detoured to Kerr Street, McGill Avenue Northwest, Concord Parkway North, and Warren C. Coleman Boulevard. The department expects that closure to last through May 2nd. A Gaston County barbecue restaurant has agreed to a settlement amid accusations that it misused pandemic relief funds. Kenneth Lee has more.
Bobby Duncan, owner of Hillbilly's Barbecue and Steaks in Lowell, has agreed to resolve allegations that he violated the False Claims Act after receiving more than $700,000 in PPP loans. Duncan will pay back just over $1.5 million for allegedly making false statements to obtain the funds. Prosecutors say Duncan used some of the relief money to buy a separate FedEx business with a longtime friend. They say he transferred $100,000 from the restaurant's corporate account to a personal account, then added his friend as an account holder to boost the friend's credit score and help secure a larger loan for the FedEx business. The loan was not granted, and prosecutors say Duncan instead used pandemic relief funds by writing 2 large checks from the restaurant's business account. Kenneth Lee, WFAE News.
The Mooresville-based home improvement company Lowe's announced Monday it had signed an agreement to buy Artisan Design Group for over $1.3 billion. The Charlotte Observer reports ADG will expand Lowe's offerings with a new distribution channel. The deal is expected to close in Lowe's 2nd quarter, which is typically in late July or early August, following regulatory approvals. ADG is a design, distribution, and installation service provider for interior surface finishes, including flooring, cabinets, and countertops for home builders and property managers. Lowe's has been challenging rival Home Depot to capture more of the pro-customer market share with perks and products. The company has about 11,000 employees in the Charlotte region, including 5,000 at their corporate office. There's been a lot of news recently in the contested race for a seat on the North Carolina Supreme Court, where Democratic incumbent Allison Riggs leads Republican challenger Jefferson Griffin by 734 votes. That margin is held up after two statewide recounts. On Friday, the state Supreme Court, with Riggs having recused herself, issued a mixed ruling in the case. It allowed most challenged ballots to remain, but did open the door for enough of them to be rejected for Griffin to win. For more, Steve Harrison spoke to our Nick Della Canal.
So let's start with the biggest group of ballots, more than 60,000 that Griffin said should be rejected because he said they have incomplete registrations. So those are going to count, right?
They are going to count, yes. Griffin and his campaign have said the ballot should be rejected because their registrations lacked some required information, like the last four digits of their Social Security number. Those 60,000 people voted early in person or by mail, and their ballots are retrievable. Griffin wanted to pull them out of the pile and reject them, but in a 4-2 decision, the state's highest court said they should be counted, even though four Republican justices harshly criticized the Democratic-controlled State Board of Elections for not fixing the problem earlier.
So that is a win for Riggs, but the court has also said that overseas ballots, many of them from members of the military, could be rejected because they didn't include a photo ID with their ballot. So what happens next for them?
Yeah, Griffin had challenged overseas ballots in four very heavily Democratic counties, Guilford, Durham, Forsyth, and Buncombe, because of the lack of photo ID. That's about 5,500 voters. The court said those challenged voters have 30 days to send in a copy of their ID, and if they don't, their ballots will be rejected. And there are a couple of questions with this decision. One, the state board had decided before the election that overseas voters didn't need to show ID. And two, the Republican justices, Paul Newby, Floberger Jr., Tamara Berenger, and Trey Allen, are not applying this new requirement to overseas voters in all 100 counties, just the Democratic ones that Griffin has challenged. Riggs spoke about this at a news conference this morning in Raleigh.
Our Constitution demands equal protection and equal treatment under the law. And those who raise their hand and get first in line to serve our country should not now be first in line to have their votes tossed.
So that's Riggs. What did the dissenting justices say?
Because Riggs recused herself, there was only one Democratic justice considering the case, Anita Earls. She wrote, quote, "Some would call it stealing an election. Others might call it a bloodless coup. But by whatever name, no amount of smoke and mirrors makes it legitimate." Earls had particularly harsh words for the court's decision to only require the challenged overseas voters to provide a copy of their ID. She then said, "Explaining how that is fair, just, or consistent with fundamental legal principles is impossible, so the majority does not try."
And there was one Republican justice, Richard Dietz, who dissented. What did he say?
He wrote that when Griffin first made his challenge after the election, Dietz, quote, "expected that when the time came, our state court surely would embrace the universally accepted principle that courts cannot change election outcomes by retroactively rewriting the law." Then for effect, he wrote, "I was wrong."
And there is one other group of voters whose ballots are being rejected, the so-called never residents.
Yeah, there are roughly 270 voters that Griffin says have never lived in North Carolina who voted. In theory, these would be people who were born overseas and have lived overseas and whose parents have North Carolina residency. The court said their ballot should not count, even though the state has previously allowed them to vote here. But Raleigh journalist Brian Anderson has tracked down 16 of those voters on the list and has compelling evidence that they have lived in the state. So it's possible that the never resident list is wrong.
Okay, so what is next for Riggs?
On Friday, she filed an appeal in federal court, but District Judge Richard Myers said the Supreme Court's order should move forward. But he did order the State Board of Elections not to certify the final result, at least for now.
That is WFAE's Steve Harrison. Steve, thank you.
Thanks, Nick.
City residents put on the fourth annual Charlotte Earth Day celebration over the weekend. Interactive art installations and activities invited community members of all ages to think about natural spaces and who has access to them. Zachary Turner visited the Independent Picture House in Northeast Charlotte to learn more.
The dim lights of Theater 4 illuminated the audience as they shuffled into their seats. A mom finds a spot near the back with her daughter. Popcorn at the ready.
My name is Jenita Castro.
What brought you to Charlotte Earth Day? What was, like, interesting to you about it?
I mean, it's just a great opportunity to see all the organizations and how they're supporting climate justice, environmental justice, and making sure that, you know, Charlotte stays at the forefront of protecting our planet and the things in it that we love.
Castro settles in for the show, and the lights dim.
Please put your hands together for Coastal Carolina University Theater Ensemble.
That was Charlotte Earth Day founder Hardin Minor. The show boots up as a single light beams down on CCU student Isaiah Cook.
I play the iPad. So our protagonist is an iPad kid. She's addicted. And so I'm the AI that's distracting her from real human connection.
I need to learn about animals really quickly. I have a project due tomorrow.
Oh, you want to see animals?
Yes.
Kid, listen, we're going to get through this together. I'm connected to the internet. I got everything you could ever want to see about animals right in here.
This will take no time.
You don't even have to go outside. Real quick.
Yeah?
It looks like somebody messaged you on Instagram.
Oh, let me look at that.
Yeah, let's just check that out real quick.
Yeah. Wow.
Oh, I mean, while we're here, we might as well scroll.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Lorian Lovell plays the iPad kid. Her name's Gloria. And in the play, she gets knocked out while scrolling on her iPad. But when she wakes up, she's not in her room anymore.
Where Gloria woke up in the jungle and she didn't know where she was.
Didn't know where she was? She was like looking around and...
Yeah, looking around like, where am I? How do I get home?
And that's Elijah, one of the kids in the audience. The jungle Gloria wakes up to is really the woods behind her house. She meets a few characters during her return trip, including some turtles, a porcupine, and a rattlesnake. And outside Theater 4, nonprofits, city departments, and local artists set up spaces to host both art and information. Charlotte artist Will Bosby Shell's tree drawings and memory tree installation adorn a hallway. Local sculptor Krista Camarado built her terraforma sculpture with local clay, dirt, and plants. For Castro, who watched the play with her daughter, she said the Earth Day celebration also offers an opportunity to reflect on who has access to green spaces.
A lot of communities, especially Black communities in Charlotte, have been through redlining and through other kind of climate injustice practices and really systemic injustice practices have less trees, which means it's hotter where they live, which means their utility bills are higher.
Castro said the tables and activities did a great job engaging kids on these topics, especially a table organized by the Charlotte chapter of Black Girl Environmentalist. Outside, volunteer Lorena James stood at the group's table, presiding over a bin filled with plant mulch.
You could just like throw these native flower seeds outside in your garden or your backyard or whatever, but by coating it in this plant mulch, it's a way to help, it's almost like a fertilizer to help the plant seeds grow. You want to take about a meatball sized worth of the plant material, squeeze a little bit of the water out, and take a pinch of our native plant seeds. This includes like echinacea, butterfly weed. Squeeze out as much of the excess water as you can, and you're able to either just leave the flower bomb as it is in this ball shape, or you can put it into these cute little heart molds we have.
On the table, two rows of flower bombs already filled the recycled cookie mold. But when these bombs go off, it'll be an explosion of roots, leaves, and native vegetation. Zachary Turner, WFAE News.
WFAE's climate coverage is supported in part by grants from the Salamander Fund and Green South Foundation. And for Tuesday, April 15th, that's Newsworthy. I'm Eric Thiel.